eggs. Now, Mike, if you could start with me by making little balls out of these, we're going to take them like so, and then just roll them like so. Then we're going to toss them in here, and Joe, you're going to put them in the egg and then toss them into the front breadcrumbs, and you're going to hand them to me. All right, Robert?
All right.
Let's see how we work as a team here, gentlemen. Mike, those are your balls are a little bit smaller than I'd like to see, Mike. If you could make them just a little bit bigger, I'll be a happier guy.
All right.
There you go.
Mario with the balls. Not on. I had no idea. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil, and I am your host. It's the last episode of the year, most likely, and I wanted to thank everybody who has tuned in to the show to listen in its freshman year. It's been a lot of fun for me. Even though I didn't get started when I wanted, I had a few bumps in the road. I'm really looking forward to 2008, bringing more things to the table, literally, and including some guests that I had been promising, some guest hosts, and hopefully we can make that happen sooner rather than later. I'm going to have a holiday beer on the show today, which was a gift from a friend of the show. He sent us a beer last year for another show that I was doing called Dude Night. And we never got around to drinking that beer or another beer that he sent us, so I figured we'd break this one out since it's a holiday-themed beer. It's called, let me get it. It is St. Nicholas Bock Beer from Penn Brewing in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it's holiday-themed. Like I said, it's a German Dunkel Bock Beer. I've not tasted it, so I'm going to have it with you. I've heard many good things about the beer, and shouldidrinkthat.com, they don't screw around, so I'm confident that this beer is going to be great. So I'm thinking about this beer, right? I'm trying to think what goes well with Bock beer. It's malty, it's rich. I think I know what would go well with it. A hamburger. And when I say hamburger, I know you're probably thinking, hamburger? What the hell kind of foodie picks a hamburger? You know, sometimes you just want a burger. You know, sometimes you want a simple burger, and sometimes you want a gourmet burger. Maybe you like a specific burger from a regional fast food joint near your house. And I'm not talking about national chains, all right? I'm not talking about McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, shit like that. A regional chain or a mom-and-pop restaurant that makes the best hamburger in town. Like in the town next to me, there's a place called Brea's Best. They make this grilled, sloppy burger with ground beef that they form by hand. Everything's done by hand. That is a hamburger. You walk within a block of this place and you can smell the grease burning on the grill. That sweet smell of grilled ground beef. That's what I'm talking about. Out here, we have In-N-Out. It's all over Southern California. I'm sure some of you have probably heard of In-N-Out. It's a chain, but it's really good. If I'm going to go out for a burger, I'm going to have In-N-Out. A double-double grilled onions. You drive up to this place and the menu has about 8 items on it. Seriously, it's very simple. They do a hamburger, a cheeseburger, a double-double, which is essentially a double cheeseburger with fresh lettuce and a tomato slice, fries, onion rings, Cokes, and shakes. They don't do chicken sandwiches. They don't do chicken nuggets, no fish sandwich, nachos, nothing but burgers, fries, and a drink. It's like the old adage, if you find a place that does one or two things, they do it well, and they do it to death. And because they don't spread themselves out thin by trying to do too much, they succeed. And part of why they succeed is the freshness of their ingredients. If you sit in the back near the kitchen, you'll see them making fries. And you've seen how it's done in chains like McDonald's and stuff, right? If you need fries there, you go to the freezer, you take a bag out of the freezer, they're frozen, pre-cut, pre-blanched fries, you drop them in the grease for 3 minutes, fries. At In-N-Out, and probably a few hundred other hamburger stands across the nation, it's done by hand. They're back there peeling large russet potatoes, putting them through a potato cutter, which knocks out big, fat, thick-cut wedges of raw potatoes ready for the fryer. Fresh. Their beef is fresh, the burger's cooked to order, and when you get it, it doesn't look like the shift manager sat on it before they put it in your bag. That is a hamburger. So I'm curious if any of you have your favorite hole-in-the-wall burger joints where you live. Where do you go when you want a fresh burger but don't want to make it at home? I'm interested in finding out where the best burgers are in the country. We have In-N-Out here, and I'm sure there are probably 100 other places around here that make incredible burgers that are better than that. I want to know what you have. Post your comments on the blog, Sound Off. We're having a burger war. Later, we're going to talk about making my favorite gourmet burger here at home. It's a Cuban-pressed burger that Bobby Flay makes. It's delicious, and it's a really good standby burger when I want something different. I put a recipe on the website for it, as well as a slideshow with pictures of everything that we're talking about here today. Check it out, zeroface.wordpress.com. And I think it's about time we open this damn beer because I'm getting thirsty. This beer, as I said, is from Should I Drink That, our friend Sick Puppy at shouldidrinkthat.com. Sick Puppy and Father Spoon at Should I Drink That are very good friends of the show. We do a beer exchange quite a bit throughout the year. And even though I guess now it's a federal crime to send beer across state lines, we do it anyway. We're rebels, you know. To hell with the law. Let's open this thing. Got my can opener here. Got the bottle. I kept it in the fridge for a couple hours to get it cool. I'll read the back of it for you in case you're interested. Until the 19th century, St. Nicholas was a tall, stern patriarch in the bishop's robes. Then he became a sky-riding, jolly old elf. He may be a milk-and-cookies kind of guy, but today he knows what you want, and it's this St. Nicholas Bock beer. It's rich, dark, and full-bodied brew with a variety of roasted and chocolate malts. Celebrate the holidays with St. Nicholas. He's in this bottle. Gee, we hope you've been good this year. Well, we're going to find out. There it is. Open. I like my tulip-shaped glasses here. Right down the center, Chief. Look at that. It's pouring a nice, rich brown. A little thin. No, it's nice. About finger and a half. It's almost black. And if you put chocolate malt in a beer, it's gonna start to turn black on you. It smells very malty. Nice, a little sugar. You taste that? Oh, it's very good. Roasted malt. Very good. A little chocolate. Little dry. I love it. And it's thin, too. It's not heavy. This is not a heavy beer. I don't even know what's the alcohol content on this. Do we even know? Did they say? They don't say the alcohol content. Those sneaky bastards. What is the alcohol content? We're going to have to find out. Doesn't matter. It is a nice, thin lager. It's got a great body, great flavor. I honestly think that this is going to go well with hamburgers. So we've lucked out. Good choice. Thanks again, Sick. ShouldIDrinkThat.com. Good tasting beer over there. Pittsburgh makes good beer, I tell you. So I read an interesting article recently in the New York Times on fish-flavored fish. And it sounded strange when I just said that, but it was even stranger when I read the article. We're facing a crisis of keeping fish in stock because our waters are overfished and we have environmental changes that are happening, global warming, all that stuff. So farmed fish is kind of flooding the market, and that helps meet our demands for seafood. Well, what was interesting was that fast food restaurants, it seems, have always chosen wild species of fish over farm-raised fish because the flavor's better, and they serve hundreds of millions of deep-fried fish sandwiches every year, like the filet of fish that comes in a square shape. You ever see any square fish, you know, swimming around the sea? I don't, you know. I don't see square fish. Fish are oblong or circular shaped. I'm not sure what in the hell that is, but I'm not eating it. But I guess even now, the fast food places are going to have to start buying from the farms too, so because there's not enough fish. But this company called HQ Sustainable Maritime Industries has created what it calls a sea-flavored tilapia, which is the first farmed fish which is manipulated to taste like a wild fish. And they claim that it met 10 out of their 10 taste parameters. And now they're negotiating distribution deals with several of the fast food chains to purchase the fish that they can make their sandwiches with. So that sounds interesting right there, right? Well, this is what made me laugh. They're using flavoring compounds to emulate the mild taste of Alaskan pollock. You know what pollock is? Pollock is the neutral tasting fish that they use to make artificial crab. It's the same stuff they use in fish sticks and all the frozen fish fillets that you see in the frozen section if you go down that aisle. So, in essence, they're able to fake the flavor of faked flavored seafood. Does that make sense? They fake the flavor of fake fish. So I honestly think we've gone off the deep end. It's crazy. I kind of wondered how you felt about this, and I thought it would be a topic of discussion on the blog. Personally, I'm sad that we're faced with a shortage of fish, and I know that. I know that we've had that it's been a long time coming that we're going to be faced with a shortage. But if you're eating a fish that tastes like a salmon, it looks like salmon, smells like salmon, but it's actually imitation salmon, yet it has all the nutrients and omega-3 fatty acids and all the other things that salmon has that are actually in the real thing, but you're eating phony fish, how does that affect you? Would you still eat it? Because I think we as Americans have been eating chemicals for so long, and imitation crab over real crab, and American cheese food slices over real cheese, that we kind of had to know this was coming at some point. And I'll say this, if it's between an imitation fish and a real fish, and I can't get the real fish, I'm going to have chicken. All right? Unless it's a fake chicken, then I'm just going to have vegetables. But I wondered what your thoughts were on that. I wanted you to comment on the blog if you feel compelled. Would you eat a fake fish that tasted like a fish that you thought it was, and everything? You wouldn't know it was not that fish if you weren't told it wasn't that fish. Would you eat it if it had the same ingredients and nutrients and everything else? Would you do it?
This beer, man, is good stuff. It's not, you look at these dark beers, they're gonna, you know, if you're not a fan, you're gonna think they're heavy. That's the kind of the misconception with Guinness. People think Guinness is a heavy beer, but it's not. It's very light. It just has a dark color, so people are afraid of it. But this is one of those beers that you drink this and you think, oh, it's gonna be heavy, but it's not. It's a light lager, but it's got great flavor, nice roasty flavors. I do like it a lot. I want to bring back a segment that we haven't done in a while. I have a couple news articles that I want to play for you. And I have two of them to share. And the first one is a segment on where meat comes from. And it centers on hamburger meat, so it's kind of topical to our show since we're having hamburgers. So listen to this.
The hamburger most Americans eat comes from an unknown number of animals, almost certainly from several countries. And today, most consumers have no way of knowing where their meat comes from, where it was slaughtered, or how long ago. The recent spate of E. coli outbreaks renewing calls for country of origin labeling. The meat from these cattle will be mixed with meat from all over the world. In fact, just this year alone, from 16 different countries. Bill Bullard represents American cattle producers.
Canada, Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, Croatia, Honduras. These products could well be included in the hamburger you're purchasing today, and you would have no idea because there is no label as to where that beef was produced.
Back in 2002, Congress mandated that food bear a made-in label. Again and again, under pressure from importers, so-called country of origin labeling has been delayed, angering some U.S. ranchers.
Any of these importers, they make more money by importing less expensive, lower quality product, and basically deceiving consumers into believing it's a U.S. product. So it's the old adage, follow the money.
The biggest beef lobby, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, represents importers as well as domestic producers. It is opposed to mandatory country of origin labeling. A spokeswoman says there is no link between where a product is from and food safety. Quote, there are multiple safeguards in place to ensure food safety, all overseen by the USDA. But in the recent TOPS contamination, it took USDA 18 days from the first positive test for E. coli before the meat was recalled. A USDA official admitting, quote, the agency is not completely satisfied with the time that elapsed. At TOPS, a USDA inspector was present daily. Quote, we've determined, in fact, there is room for improvement.
So far, at least three people have been sickened by the E. coli contamination that led Cargill to recall 844,000 pounds of ground beef. Cargill is not publicly saying whether any of that beef was imported or where it came from, but it said it would report that information to the USDA.
This is why I say all the time, eat local whenever possible. Try to be specific about where you shop. Whole Foods, Henry's, Trader Joe's, places that sell meat that actually tell you which farm it's coming from, or at least, you know, let you know what state your meat is coming from, that is really your safest bet. It's getting really scary out there. It really is. It's getting so scary. It's one thing to have recalls on toys because of lead and other harmful elements, things like that. But when you're talking about ingesting food that's coming from multiple sources, and it includes other countries that you don't even know about, there's no way of knowing what you're putting in your body. And, you know, this is where the vegetarians are going to make their loudest noise. That, you know, you're not going to have this problem if you're eating local vegetables or if you're eating vegetables that, you know, are raised locally. I'm proud to be an American, and I say eat American whenever possible, whether it's meat or vegetables or anything. If you're lucky enough to live close to farms that actually make their meat available to the public, and it's a farm you feel you can put your trust in, support that farm, buy their product. And this is not a situation that is specific to ranchers and purveyors of meat, okay? This is an epidemic. This outside competition is happening with orange growers, avocado growers, all kind of growers. American farmers are forced to scramble and lower their prices to compete with foreign importers all the time. And it's driving farmers to the poorhouse. So if you're an American, support American farmers. Stop with this bullshit about fair trade, because it's killing the very people who have been putting food on your tables for years. And even if you end up paying a little bit more for your food, big deal. At least you know where it's coming from. And this is why I continue to support and tell everyone who listens to this show to buy their vegetables from the farmers market. There are some farmers markets that sell seafood and some that sell beef and pork too. So if you're lucky enough to be in one of those areas, well, God bless you, you lucky bastards. Oh, and listen, when it comes to ground beef, if you're at the meat department in your grocery store and the package just says ground beef, maybe you should think twice about it. Either buy the package that has the name of the farm on it, or, better yet, buy a sirloin steak, take it home, and run it through that meat grinder that you bought when we made sausage a few episodes ago. Make your own damn ground beef, that way you'll know where it came from that steak you bought. Ugh, good grief. I'm not pissed off enough. Let's play another clip about young vegetarians now. Don't they have it easy?
Heather Cox is only 17, but she did her homework before becoming a vegetarian.
I went in and talked to my doctor, and they told me the things that I was going to be missing from my diet.
The American Dietetic Association says when not done correctly, a vegetarian diet can lead to deficiencies in vitamin B12, calcium, iron, and protein, nutrients vital to growing children.
If you're deficient in protein, it would impede your height, your muscle mass, your bones, and the way your body functions, your ability to fight disease.
Pediatrician Jennifer Tender's three daughters have all tried a vegetarian diet. The doctor says it's typically high in antioxidants and low in fat.
Vegetarian kids grow up to be just as healthy and probably actually a little healthier because they are not eating the foods high in saturated and trans fats.
The ADA has some advice for parents.
When your child announces that they want to be a vegetarian, you just need to make sure that they're eating that varied, balanced diet.
And like Heather, get regular checkups.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt a vegetarian diet is extremely healthy. It's lower in fat, definitely. And I'm happy to see that there are kids conscious of their diet this early in their life. Truly, I'm not screwing around. You think I'm joking? Look at you laugh over there. I think it's something that should definitely be applauded. They're this conscious, this young. We've got childhood obesity problems in our country now, more than we've ever seen. I read a stat somewhere that it was like 65% of Americans are obese now. That's horrible. But the key is to be healthy. So eat complete proteins like rice and beans. And this is why it's important to note that vegetarians can still eat some animal products that do contain complete proteins or things that actually help make complete proteins. Without eating meat, they can eat eggs, cheese, milk, honey, things like that. They just can't eat meat, which, you know, or chicken and beef, things like that. So if you're a vegan, you're screwed. You can't eat anything but vegetables. So that's where this report kind of hits home for those scrawny bastards. So let's talk burgers, all right? Enough with vegetarians. This burger that we're going to make is kick-ass. Download the recipe from the website. Check out the pictures. It's called the Pressed Cuban-Style Burger. And the recipe is courtesy of none only than Bobby Flay. I guess in Miami, they're real popular, these burgers, because of the heavy Cuban influence they have out there. You can use soft rolls for this. You don't have to buy any fancy bread. All right, just regular soft rolls. Use about 80% lean chuck roast, ground. Ground it yourself if you can. This is the perfect texture for burgers. You don't want anything too lean when you're making a burger, because it'll dry out on you. So 20% fat is fine. Don't get the 10% or 12% fat, you'll be highly disappointed. And listen, you're making a hamburger. Why would you worry about fat content in beef? I've never understood that. You're eating ground beef? I mean, you want it to be nice and luscious and fatty. It's going to have cheese and ham on it, this thing. It's not a diet burger. You just have to jog an extra mile or something, or ride your bike another 20 minutes. Work it off. What you're going to need to make the burger is about a pound of ground beef, and you're going to make a garlic mayonnaise for the buns. So we'll need a half cup of mayonnaise and 3 cloves of garlic that you'll want to roast beforehand and then crush into a paste. Roast the garlic, then add it to the mayonnaise, make the special spread for the rolls, and then season that. For the hamburger buns, don't buy cheap-ass $2 pack of buns, all right? Get good rolls. It's a good sandwich. Get good rolls. Kaiser rolls from the bakery or any kind of a round roll will work perfect. You'll want some sliced Swiss cheese and then thinly sliced ham. Now, you can use regular ham, but if you want this thing to really pop and explode with flavor, you'll want to get either prosciutto or serrano ham, which is a smoked Spanish ham. Finally, you want dill pickles that you'll slice into quarter-inch slices to put across the top. You'll start by forming the burgers, season it with salt and pepper, and then flatten them into burgers, normal size thickness of burgers, and then put them over a grill at really high heat until they're medium rare. 3 to 4 minutes aside usually does it on a nice hot grill. Combine the mayonnaise and the roasted garlic that you've crushed into a paste. Season that with salt and pepper. Taste it. Make sure it's right. Cut your rolls and then spread the mayonnaise garlic mixture on each half, and then spread some Dijon mustard on each half as well. Put a slice of Swiss cheese on the bottom half bun, then put the burger that you've grilled on top of that, then put the slice of ham, prosciutto, or serrano ham across the meat, whatever you've chosen to use there, and then add another slice of cheese on top of that, then add the pickle slices, and then cover it with the top bun. Now comes the press part, and this is important. So it's kind of like a panini, but you're doing it on the grill. You wrap the burgers in foil, all right? Completely wrap them in foil, put them on the grill, and then put something heavy on top of it, like a cast iron skillet or a couple of clean bricks that you've wrapped in foil. Put that on top just to weigh it down. Whatever you can use to put weight on the burger, all right? Keep them on the grill for about 4 minutes. You can close the top if you want. It makes like an oven. Keep them on for about 4 minutes, then open it up, take the weight off, take the burgers off the grill, unwrap the burgers, try not to burn your hands off. Enjoy. If that doesn't send you to the happy house, nothing's going to send you to the happy house. It's a pressed Cuban-style burger. And if you're in the neighborhood, try a nice German Bock beer to go along with that. The St. Nick is perfect for this. Let me have some more before I send myself off to La La Land. See, it's perfect with this burger. It's so freaking good. And I like my meat a little bit juicy, you know, so don't overcook the meat. But you got enough fat in there, it's going to handle it. All right, I think I'm done here. That is all I've got. That is my life as a foodie. It has been great being with you today. Thanks for stopping by. I wish you all a very Merry Christmas. And if we don't get together for another show before the year ends, have a Happy New Year. We'll see you in 2008. So long, everyone. Ciao.